Now, I am going to read some important questions and its answers. Fair set time had my soul and grew up fostered alike by beauty and by fear. Elucidate these lines from Wordsworth's Replute, Book 1 and 2. Or, what does Wordsworth mean when he says the Prelude, Book 1, that in his early life he was fostered by the two influences of beauty and fear? Illustrate your answer by citing at least one example of each of the two influences. Or, both joy and fear played a part in the mental and spiritual growth in the formative years of boyhood. Discuss with reference to the Prelude, Book 1 and 2. Let's read the answer. My two books of the Prelude of Wordsworth give a specific account of a formative period of his poetic life. We have an opportunity to have a clear glimpse of the role of nature in educating and modeling the poet's character. His early years of boyhood were passed in the fertile atmosphere of nature. He makes a confession to this effect. Fair set time had my soul and grew up, fostered alike by beauty and by fear. Wordsworth refers to the very significant influences on his formative years. These were the influences of beauty and of fear. Indeed, these two influences played a vital role in the poet's early life. Beauty generated feelings of joy, but the forms of nature induced a kind of fear in him. Wordsworth gives an account of how he led a life of joyful sports and youthful adventures among the native hills and valleys. He was deeply influenced by the beauty of natural sights, the beautiful Derwent, the picturesque hills and valleys of the Lake District, the gentle breezes blowing murmuringly, all what brought to the poet feelings of inexplicable joy. Extremely delightful were his experiences of bathing and basking on a summer's day, or leaping through the groves of yellow ragout, of skating in the evening. The following lines speak the poet's experience of joy. Waxed in the sun and flogged and waxed again, alternate all a summer's day or secured, the scanty fields leaping through the flowery groves of yellow ragout or when rock and hill. The woods and distant skiddos' lofty height were bronzed with the deepest radiance, stood alone, when at the sky, as if I had been born on Indian plains and from my mother's heart had drawn abroad the wantonness to sports, a naked savage in the thunder shower. Wordsworth described the most delightful experience of seeking with his friends. The following is the description of an evening of beauty and pleasure. It was a time of rapture, clear and cloud. The village clock tolled six. I wheeled about, proud, the exulting like an untired horse that cares not for its home, all sowed with still. We hissed alone the polished ties and games, conferred imitative of the chase. And woodland pleasures of resounding horn, the pack loud chiming and the hunted hare. In Book 2, there are at least two episodes in which Wordsworth's soul is seen to be fostered by beauty rather than by fear. The pattern of these two incidents is simple. A period of noisy, violent exercises is followed by the moments of peace. The following lines signify the vigorous moment of the burst of glee. Through half an afternoon we played on the smooth platform where the skill prevailed, or happy blunder trimmed bursts of glee made all the mountain ring. The peace is signified by the minstrel of the troop left alone upon the rock who blew his flute like the single bear that sang so sweetly in the nave. Wordsworth was so charmed by the music that it sank down into his heart and held him like a dream. But according to Wordsworth, nature is not all beauty or joy. Nature's gentle ministrations alternate with more stern interventions. Wordsworth is conscious of this fact, then therefore lays emphasis often the discipline of fear. Thus, when the dry wind blew round his head, his exhilaration got overshadowed by a sense of supernatural awe when his home. Above the raven's nest by knots of grass and half-inch pieces in the slippery rock. In the same way, the episode of the stolen boat shows the administration of fear in the heart of the boot. He was frightened by a craggeries when he sailed the stolen boat towards it. Wordsworth was amazed with a sense of mysterious awe at the scene. When from behind that craggy steep till then, the horizons bound a huge peak, black and huge, as if with voluntary power instinct upreared its head. The awful scene remained imprinted upon the mind of the poet for a long time. Rather, it became a part of Wordsworth's being. The huge and mighty forms became significant in the development of his emotional life. It may be noted here that by fear, Wordsworth means a sense of awe and wonder at not cowardice. Thus, it is exemplified in Book 1 and 2 of the Prelude. The beauty and fear played significant roles in the shaping of Wordsworth's emotional life. As regards to this discipline of fear, Wordsworth seems to have been influenced by the 18th century philosopher David Hadley and his philosophy of associationism. Hadley and other empiricist philosophers laid great stress on the early background and environment and expressed the view that the character of man develops during the childhood and youth as a direct result of his physical experiences and the feelings of pleasure and pain from such experience. But Wordsworth the poet was above these philosophers. In the Prelude, fear is associated with sublime form. And if these forms of images are grand and beautiful enough, they somehow ennoble the feelings they evoke. Wordsworth has vividly explained towards the end of the Book 1 of the poem how his personality has molded by nature's impressive discipline of pain and pleasure. By the impressive discipline of fear, by pleasure and repeated happiness, so frequently repeated by force of obscure feelings representative of things forgotten, they seem seen so bright, so beautiful, so majestic in themselves. Though yet the day was distant, did become habitually dear, and all their forms and changeful colors by invisible links were fastened to the affections. Now, I'm going to read the question number 2. Justifies the subtitle of the Prelude from the study of your poem. Discuss the Prelude as an expression of romantic egotism. Or discuss the Prelude as a spiritual autobiography of the poet. Or the Prelude is much more than an autobiography. Discuss. Answer. In the Book 1 of the Prelude, Wordsworth writes, "One end at least hath been attained. My mind hath been revived, and if the genial mood desert me not, forthwith shall be brought down to latter years of the story of my life." These lines evidently indicate that Wordsworth's ambition in writing the poem was to unfold the story of his life from childhood to early middle age. Though not an autobiography in the usual sense of the term, it is still a record of the growth and development of the poet's mind. Wordsworth wrote in the preface to Escarson, "The preparatory poem is biographical, conducts the history of the author's mind to the point and when he was emboldened to hope that his faculties were sufficiently matured for entering upon the arduous labor which he had proposed to himself." The making of a poet is the subject of the Prelude. The poet's early love of nature and the gradual growth of his awareness of it is the content of the first two books. His student life at Cambridge is the subject of Book 3 and 4 and 6. The Book 3 concerns with Wordsworth's actual residence in college. Book 3 tells about his attachment to books. His London life is reflected in Book 7 and shows the relation between man and nature. Books 9 and 10 and 11 reveal the impact of French Revolution on the poet's emotional and intellectual makeups. Book 12, 13 and 14 show how the imagination absorbing all experiences and transcending its links mankind with divine. Wordsworth describes his impression about the nature in the first two books of the prelude. He owes a debt to nature. Nature affords to him a liberty which he could not taste while living in the wild city of London. The happy breeze that animates his soul stirs off in him in a corresponding breeze of creative energy. Nature becomes a source of creative impulse, a fertile ground for creative activity. In the company of nature, his soul had a fair seed time in which he grew up like by beauty and fear. Wordsworth describes how in his childhood his attachment to nature was only a healthy boy's love for open-air sports and pastimes. At that time, he indulged in such sports as bathing, basking, brass nail, burnesting, fishing, kite-rolling, and card-playing, etc. He also enjoyed himself in such activities as stealing a boat. He gives a description of the animal pleasures that he enjoyed in his boyhood. Washed in the sun and flogged and bucked again, alternate all a summer's day or scold, this candy field slipping through flowery groves of yellow ragout or when rock and hill. The woods and distant skiddaw's lofty height were bronzed with the pale radiance stood alone, beneath the sky as if I had been born on Indian plains and from my mother's heart. He had drawn abroad the wantonness to sport, a naked savage in the thunder shower. But the boat incident made Wordsworth conscious of the mysterious power of nature. His animal love of nature slowly began to turn itself into mystical or spiritual. He began to experience some transcendental presence in nature. The following lines describe the mystical experience of Wordsworth. And as I rose upon the stroke, my boat, waist heaving though the water like a swan, when from behind that craggy steps till then, the horizons bound a huge peak, black and huge, as if with voluntary power instinct upreared its head, I struck and struck again. And growing still in stature, the grim space towered of beauty between me and the stars and still, so for it seemed with purpose of its own and measured motion like a living thing strode after me. Likewise, narrating an incident of bat catching, Wordsworth recalls how he began to be conscious of the existence of mysterious presence in nature. When during the nocturnal wanderings a strong desire overpowered his better reason and the bird which was the captive of another's toil became his prey, he felt. When the deed was done, I heard among the solitary hills low breathings coming after me and sounds of undistinguishable motion, steps almost as silent as the turf that rode. Such experience quickened his spiritual faculties, which enabled him to see. Wisdom and spirit of the universe, thou soul, that art of eternity of thought, that gives me to forms and images a breath and everlasting motion. In book 2, Wordsworth tells how, instead of admiring nature, passively he began to look at nature through the modifying powers of his own mind. Now the sun seemed to have involved with heavenly splendor. He experienced with his visionary eyes. An auxiliary light came from my mind, which on the setting sun bestowed new splendors. His receptive mind was now able to connect various disjointed experiences, and by the time he reached the age of 17, he had reached a state of supreme happiness and was able to see the underlying unity of all that is created in nature. He could experience the sentiment of being spread over all that moves, that all that seemed still. He acknowledges the depth of gratitude to nature in the following lines. The blessing of my life, the gift is yours, ye vines and sounding cataracts, its use. Ye mountains, thine, O nature, thou hast fed my lofty speculations, and in thee, for this uneasy heart of ours, I find a never-failing principle of joy and purest passion. Thus, the prelude is much more than an autobiography. It is an Abercrombie observes story of universal significance, of which Wordsworth's own unique experience is offered as the type. It's the story of the mind greatly conscious of its own enigma, gradually establishing its secure relationship with the world equally enigmatic. The views of M.S. Abrahams are equally significant. The prelude correspondingly is ordered in three stages. There is a process of mental development which, although at times suspended, remains a continuum. With this pause is violently broken by the crisis of apathy and despair. But the mind then recovers an integrity which, despite admitted losses, is represented as a level of higher than an initial unity. In that, the mature mind possesses powers together with an ordered range, depth and sensitivity of awareness, which were the products of range, depth and which are products of the critical experiences it has undergone. The discovery of this fact resolves a central problem which has been implicit throughout the prelude, a problem of how to justify the human experience of pain and loss and suffering. He is now able to recognize that his life is, in the end, all gratulant, it rightly understood. Now, I am going to read the question number 3. The prelude is concerned with not with Wordsworth, the private person, but with the poet's mind. How far is this statement true of the first two books? Or, consider the importance of the prelude book 1 and 2 for a study of Wordsworth's mind. When Wordsworth conceived of a plan to write a great poem, he was faced with the problem of a suitable subject. Instead of entertaining the subject of heroes and kings, he concentrated on the idea of shaping out some tale from my own heart which would be more near kin to his own passion and habitual thoughts. In doing so, he did what he thought as a thing of unprecedented in literary history. He told a great deal about himself in the prelude. He was conscious of the fact that his expression might be regarded as an expression of vanity, for which he offered his clarification. It's not self-conceit that has induced me to do this, but real humility. I began the work because I was unprepared to treat any more arduous subject and different of my own powers. Here at last I hoped that to a certain degree I should be sure of succeeding. As I felt, I thought, therefore I could not easily be bewildered. The prelude is not autobiographical poem in the usual sense of the term. It does not reveal the details of the life of Wordsworth as the private person. In fact, it is about Wordsworth as poet and not as an individual person. The subtitle, The Growth of a Poet's Mind, makes the point clear. The details of the early experiences of the poet do not carry reference to names of persons and places categorically as is done in a formal autobiography. There is no mention of his parentage. He does not name the valley in which he was born. The first experience that he mentions takes place when he is already 9. Thus, all those details that are not relevant to the growth of poet's mind have been excluded. Wordsworth begins talking about himself with the following lines. Fair seed time had my soul, and I grew up, fostered alike by beauty and by fear. Beauty and fear are two inseparable attributes of God. An awareness of God's beauty enlarges poet's sympathies and makes him reach out to the entire humanity. The consciousness of the awful attributes of God, on the other hand, exercises a restraining and chastising influence and check waywardly thoughts and actions. Wordsworth felt low breathings and sound undistinguishable motion when he laid his hands upon words trapped by someone else. When he was rubbing the birds' nest of their eggs, he had strange utterances from the loud dry wind, and both the earth and the sky seemed to be chiding him. In the stolen boat episode, he was conscious of the guilt, and rowing across the lake could give him only troubled pleasure he experienced. The huge cliff rose up between me and stars, and still, when the measured motion, like a living thing, stored after me. Wordsworth was conscious of the high calling of the poet, therefore he subjected himself to the influence of nature. He felt his sensibilities to be ennobled and refined, and he made preparations to be a great poet. He receives diverse impressions from various objects of nature. All these impressions are interwoven in some kind of harmony, which he calls some dark invisible workmanship. What reconciles discordant elements and makes them move in one society? Earlier, Wordsworth enjoyed nature as a background to his boyish sports, but when his mind matured, he began to take pleasure in nature for her own sake. Now nature had become a source of calmer pleasures instead of early boisterous ones. In fact, Wordsworth's growth of mind experiences three phases of development. So far, his early love of nature is concerned. In the first stage, he begins to be aware of the creative activity of his mind as it operates on what it sees. Though during this period, the external images are still predominant. A plastic power abode within me, a forming hand at times, rebellious, acting in a dubious mood, a local spirit of his own at work, with general tendency, but for the most subservient strictly to external things with which it commands. In the second stage, Wordsworth becomes conscious of the images within his mind, as if they had passed through the scenes from outer to an inner existence. Oft in this moment, such a holy calm would overspread my soul that bodily eyes were utterly forgotten, and what I saw appeared like something in myself, a dream, a prospect in the mind. And in the final stage, the life of senses is entirely suspended. He now acquires a mystical power of joy and which is now able to see into everything. That lost beyond the reach of thought and human knowledge to the human eye, invisible yet leaps to the heart. Thus, the prelude is not a self-portrait, is deficient in the kind of material that an autobiography usually records. It's not concerned with the private life of the poet, but with the growth of the poetic mind. In his poetic theory, poetry is the expression of the emotion recollected in tranquility of the emotion free from immediate provocation and stimulation. This state of his mind is expressed in the following lines of Book 1. Ah me, that all the terrors of the early miseries, regrets, vexations, lassitudes, that all the thoughts and feelings which have been infused into my hand should ever have made of the calm existence that is mine when I am worthy of myself.